Welcome to Purifying Truths with Ace Star. Thank you so much for joining us today. Today we have with us the fabulous Miss Jennifer Moore. For those of you who are not familiar with Miss Jennifer, she is a thriving mentor. We're going to learn so much more about that in just a few. She's also a spiritual guide and a trainer for imps, or should we say empaths. Welcome to Purifying Truths, Jennifer. Please tell us about yourself.
Thank you so much, A-Star. I'm so excited to be here, and I can hardly wait to dive in and talk about all things empath and whatever else the universe decides we want to talk about.
Yes, yes, super exciting. I love the fact that you're not new to this game. Right? You have over 35 years experience. You are an energy healer and a spiritual guide. And I want to go way back to when you had your first experience. I believe you were 9 years old. Will you share that with us?
Absolutely. So I have always been highly sensitive and empathic. I've always been somebody who has been very sensitive to the energy in spaces, to different people's moods, to what's going on. And as a child, it didn't make any sense to me because often I was picking things up that people were not necessarily owning. And so there was a certain amount of confusion about why do I feel so strange? And also a lot of people basically sort of doing a lot of like, well, you know, that's not really happening here. You're just overreacting. I had this kind of sensitivity, but then when I was 9 years old, I had this day where I had this vivid dream that my mom had died. And it was a weird dream because it was like, I mean, it was a nine-year-old dream. So I dreamed that my mom fell over the banister of our staircase and fell to her death. And I kind of laugh now just because it's like, it's just such a nine-year-old kind of drama dream. Mm-hmm. But I felt awful the next day. I felt so bad. I just felt despair. It was like the worst day of my nine-year-old life. And at the end of the day, we were at dinner, sitting with my mom and dad and my brother and sister. And my mother says, by the way, so-and-so's mother died of breast cancer last night. And I knew this dream was about my friend because this girl had been my first BFF. Like she and I were really close when we were littler. I'd met her when I was three. Then she moved out of the area around the time I was maybe six or seven. And I didn't have any contact with her whatsoever. You could not make a phone call to another state without paying a lot of money in long distance charges. So it wasn't like I'd be picking up the phone. So I had no contact with her. And then I have this vivid, vivid dream that my mom has died. I really believe that that was directly connected to her experience and to her despair the night that her mom died from breast cancer. I've only just really come to understand this, but what's really fascinating to me about this dream and about the difference between being an empath and a psychic is that I didn't dream about her and her mother. I processed all that information as if it was my own. And I felt the despair as if it was my own. I felt the grief as if it was my own. And I also had the dream about this event as if I was the person going through it. And what I've come to realize is that this is something that's very common for people who are empaths and have a lot of empathic sensitivity. We like mediums, psychics, intuitives, channels. We are picking up information from from the unseen world, and we are picking up information from something greater than ourselves. But unlike all of these other characteristics that understand what's theirs and what's not theirs. Like they know they're picking something up from outside of themselves. Mm-hmm. Those of us who are empaths often experience information as if it's our own. And that can make things very, very confusing.
I bet it can. My goodness, I was going to ask you to define what it means to be an empath. You have done that oh so well. When we think about an empath, we think about psychic abilities or intuition. We don't really understand that you're actually feeling it. You're going through it. Mm-hmm. Our mind sets off those hormones as if we're actually physically going through it, which is why your mood was different.
Yes. Yeah. And to go a little bit further into the definition of empath, because I mean, right now it's a buzzword, you know, it's popular. All kinds of people are throwing it around. Your definition may be different than mine. I'll just say my definition of an empath is that an empath is a being, doesn't have to be a human. It could be an animal as well. But somebody who is picking up the thoughts, the feelings, the energy, and the sensations from the world around them, and then experiencing it as if it is their own. The intuitives, they have this gut sense. I find that intuition tends to live in the body, that it tends to be in the belly, the solar plexus, and the heart. Mm-hmm. And in my experience, more of the psychic abilities, the clairs, they tend to be more sort of thought. They tend to be more kind of in the upper registers, if you're thinking in terms of chakras, from the throat chakra to the crown chakra. But in both of these cases, there is an understanding of separation. And in my personal experience, because I'm also very intuitive and psychic, my experience is when I'm receiving sort of a psychic download or an intuitive sense about something, there's a calmness to it. There's this quality of being able to pick up information. I know it's not necessarily mine, and I'm not emotionally engaged in it. Whereas for when I am in a state of empathic overwhelm, one of the biggest challenges is the fact that I'm processing all of it through my own system and through my own energy body and through my own emotions and my own thoughts. And that can make it really, as I said before, really confusing.
I completely understand and agree with you. It can be, but you are definitely clearing those muddy waters for us, and I appreciate that from you. Tell me, please, Jennifer, about how imps and narcissists seem to just be magnetic. They have a connection.
If you and I were on Zoom right now, you would see how this big grin I have on my face about this, because I really, really love this topic and I really love talking about it. So I personally believe that empaths and narcissists start as a match made in heaven, and that there is something about both sides that really meet the other's needs. We've defined empath. Let's just define narcissist for a second here. Mm-hmm. So a narcissist is a person who's kind of on the opposite side of the spectrum, although I would actually say that the extreme end of the spectrum would be like psychopaths and sociopaths who have absolutely no regard for human life whatsoever other than their own. I believe narcissists do care about other human beings, that the world around them still matters, and that they do have a sense of social, how would I put it, like social responsibility. They understand that there are social rules to follow and things like that. But the bottom line with a narcissist is that it's all about them. It's all about them pretty much 24/7. And what I have found in my travels, and I am not a scientist, nor do I play one on TV or a research specialist, pretty consistently, everybody that I know who's been in a relationship with a narcissist and every narcissist that I've ever encountered has experienced a great deal of trauma early on or an incredible amount of neglect as a very small child. And something that I learned when I was in graduate school that was one of those like mind-blowing, like, you know, explosion in my brain, is that basically human beings are wired for connection. And if we are not connected, we will die. We will perish. And so human beings would rather receive negative attention than no attention at all. That it is more harmful to a human being to be what the psychological term is disconfirmed than it is to be negatively confirmed. And so for a lot of narcissists, what happens is very early on in their developmental stages, they are basically not able to form healthy bonds and attachments with parents, usually because of neglect and rejection and abandonment. And what ends up happening as a result of that is that there is this core wound that is seeking attention. But the thing is, when a human being is not receiving attention, they learn very early on, and this is true with dogs, with cats, like you can see this over and over again. We act out to get attention. And so a narcissist is seeking fulfillment to the attention that they did not get, and they are desperately looking for that validation, for those strokes, for that acknowledgement, for that recognition, and for that adoration that is sort of the God-shaped hole inside of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the empath and the narcissist first encounter each other, particularly when it comes to either like a friendship, a romantic relationship, or a relationship with even like a boss or a work colleague, the empath recognizes the need in the narcissist, feels that need, and starts to fulfill those needs and starts to respond to them. The narcissist starts to glow up from that and just feel all full of love and light and positivity and happiness. And so that becomes this wonderful feedback between the adoring empath and the adored narcissist. Between the two of them, the narcissist, they stroke the empath. They do all of these things to validate how awesome they are. Mm-hmm. And the empath validates how awesome the narcissist is. And if it's a romantic relationship, it's very likely some of the best sex you've ever had in your life. Both of them believe that they have found their one true love, that this is the best thing since sliced bread, and that both of them are getting their needs met. What I have seen happens in this dynamic and in this relationship is that at a certain point, life goes on. At a certain point for the empath, other priorities come in. Often it is that the empath and the narcissist decide to settle down, make house together, and have kids. Mm. And when the kids show up and the narcissist is no longer the center of attention, that's when things go sideways because of what I was saying earlier, which is that the narcissist wants attention. And if they can't get attention in a positive way, then they're going to start doubling down on the negative attention and on acting out in order to get any kind of response at all. The empath hasn't done anything. The empath is just going about their business, and now suddenly they're saddled with the responsibility of dealing with an infant, or maybe they've managed to get through infancy and they're dealing with like a teething toddler.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happening is the empath is like, what just happened? Where did my beloved go? Where did all the support go? Where did all of the gifts and the strokes and the positive attention go?
Mm-hmm.
And so the empath becomes often very confused because the dynamic hasn't changed for them, except that there's children there. But they're kind of like, well, we have these kids. And interestingly, often it's the narcissist who pushes the agenda about having children because the children are like a reflection of them. And the narcissist doesn't necessarily have an accurate understanding of what's going to be involved in kids. And so they're just seeing it as like, oh, I'm going to have these kids and it's going to make me look good. They're not aware of the fact that there's going to be a major sacrifice coming up and they're not going to get the kind of attention that they had been getting. So it's this perfect storm that happens for both of them, between the narcissist and the empath. And the thing is that we don't know they're narcissists usually until we're deep enough in it that we're invested. We've put in the time, we've put in the energy. Chances are, when it comes to a romantic relationship, there's been a lot of sex. And the thing is, when we physically bond with other human beings, we weave cords. We do this thing where we weave these connections with each other. And some of these connections are these beautiful tethers of connection, like a mother and a child in a healthy attachment. It's almost like the umbilical cord stays as an energetic thing. Mm-hmm. But we form these with pretty much anybody that we're bonding with. And sex is one of the most powerful ways to almost guarantee that you're going to have some kind of cording to another person or tethering to another person. And once that has happened, it gets much, much, much harder to have objectivity and discernment about whether somebody is appropriate or not, because we're invested, we care, we love this person. And once you love somebody, it gets a lot harder to just like throw the relationship under the bus. And a lot of times what we end up doing is throwing ourselves under the bus instead.
My goodness, that is so true. I see it time and time again.
Yeah.
What can we do to fix this? I know the audience knows exactly what you're talking about. You have described what I'm going to say over 75% of us have seen or and been through.
So I think this is a very complicated situation because, first off, I will say that once children are involved, it becomes a much messier situation and it involves a lot more extracting oneself from it. And so I guess I would say, if you are listening to us having this conversation right now and you're like, oh my God, I'm in this situation, I really want to encourage you to give yourself a lot of grace and to be really kind to yourself. If you're just like, oh, I'm in a relationship with a narcissist, I've got, you know, and I'm kind of stuck here for right now. What I would say is getting your ducks in the row, like really looking at what is it going to take to get out of this relationship. And one of the statistics that I recently heard is that it generally, on average, takes a woman 7 attempts to get out of an abusive relationship. That when it comes to domestic violence, and while there may be no physical abuse going on between the narcissist and the empath, there is very often a lot of emotional abuse going on. Where are your support systems? Did the narcissist completely cut you off of all your support systems? Then maybe trying to rebuild some of those bridges. Also, looking at ways to actually think about your resources, your support, squirreling away some money. Start strategizing an exit plan. If you are dealing with domestic violence, looking into the resources for DV and looking at what are your options. If somebody's never been in an abusive situation, it's very easy for somebody who's either never been there or maybe just young and naive to be kind of like, hey, why don't you just get out of this relationship? Like, this isn't good for you. You should leave. But anybody who's been in a situation like that understands that it takes a lot more planning. It takes a lot more strategizing. It takes also recognizing when it's safe to leave. Mm-hmm. Because sadly, one of the domestic violence statistics that I learned when I was in graduate school, the most vulnerable time for a partner who is in a battering relationship is when they leave the relationship. They are more likely to actually lose their life when they leave than when they stay. And so strategizing and looking at resources, doing your research, and really starting to think about, like, what do I need to do to be safe? What do I need to get in place in order to exit this relationship? And in my experience, working with a number of people who've been in relationships with narcissists, and working with a number of people over the years on the other, who are on the other side of that, maybe we met after they'd left, what I know to be pretty consistent is that it takes time to break free, and that it is not just a one and done kind of thing. So that's sort of talking about if you're in that relationship already. But if you are in that courtship stage where you're starting to be like, ooh, this is really yummy, one of the kind of, for lack of a better term, fatal flaws of an empath is that we bond incredibly easily. And we love people incredibly easily. Mm-hmm. We rush into relationships really fast. We see the best in people. And it's really, really easy to get intoxicated by that dynamic and basically sell yourself down the river before you even know what has happened to you. If you recognize that you are an empath, pump the brakes. Really pay attention and watch the signs so that we are not intoxicated by that tape loop of adoration. When we are approaching a narcissist with more objectivity, we will often actually recognize the narcissistic tendencies very early on. They will probably flirt, they will probably compliment, they will probably do a lot of gift buying and extravagant attention and taking you on a whirlwind tour and all of these other things. But at the same time, you might start just noticing how often, if you are having a conversation with them, if they're saying something about themselves and you say something about yourself, do they pick up that bid and ask you another question about you? Or does it go back immediately to being like the me 24/7 show? For me personally, this was the game changer. This was where, and so there were two parts of it. First part was making the decision to actually practice some discernment and pump the brakes before I decided that I was going to fall in love with somebody. Watch and wait and see what was going on and what kind of signals they were really giving me. In order to do that, though, I actually had to make another decision, which was that I was not going to jump into bed with them once I decided that I liked them. Because I grew up with a mom who was very pro-sex ed and pro-women's lib. Mm-hmm. And so I was raised in a time where, you know, that idea of good girls don't and good girls wait was kind of, this is just the patriarchy imposing these rules on us. And so for a long time, I had a hard time with that idea of waiting on sexual engagement with somebody, because it felt to me like it was like this very sort of like prim and proper kind of puritanical way of looking at things. But what I have found is that the truth is that once we start becoming physically intimate with another human being, we lose our perspective. And so what I would say is that we need to make the decision that we're going to pump the brakes and give ourselves time to get to know who that person is before we decide to commit to a physical relationship with them. Mm-hmm. And looking for some of those red flags, looking for, if I'm having a conversation with you, are you listening to me? Are you asking me questions about me? Or do you always turn it back around to being about you? I really love, it's, you know, real old school now, but I really love the song, What Have You Done For Me Lately by Janet Jackson. Because I have never personally experienced a song that has more of the attitude that I absolutely needed to cultivate for myself than that specific song, in that it has this quality of, what have you done for me lately? Like, mm-hmm. how are you meeting my needs? Because as an empath, and I think as females in general, we are socialized to constantly be looking at, are we meeting that other person's needs? Do they mm-hmm. want us? Do they desire us? Do they like us? I know for myself that I spent a good 30 years of my life looking into or getting into relationships. Do they like me? Am I desirable enough for them? Do they want me? And I didn't even consider whether I wanted them or whether that was interesting. And what I've noticed is that not only do empaths pick up on the emotions of other people and the energy and the pleasure in their body and all these other things, we also pick up on people's desire and we pick up on their will. We can really lose ourselves in that other person's desire for us, as well as their will and like what they want us to do. And so we can think, as we start really feeling that attention coming at us and the desire coming at us, we can experience it almost as if it's our own. And in my experience, kind of the only way we can sort of back off from that is by making the decision to slow down and cool our jets and really watch the situation.
And to add to that, we have to watch. We have to watch. Our intuition is so important. We put that in our back pocket, per se. You were talking about the strategizing and how you're going to leave and dealing with domestic violence. We get so beaten down, so involved in the other person's feelings that we forget that we have feelings that are valid too.
Exactly.
And that's how they're able to manipulate us when we buy these things that, oh my goodness, look what they've done for me. And they mm-hmm. just love it because they're like, oh, I did this for her and I did this for him. And I did, you know, because they have this perfect picture painted, mm-hmm. quote unquote, to society, mm-hmm. when that's not how it is at all. I tell you, you have been preaching. It may not be in Genesis through Revelation, but I can relate. And you said 30, I did 20, and I call it hard time. But mm-hmm. I thank God for opening my eyes so that I can see. And I am the statistic. It took me 7 times. And because of that, I believe that we are kindred spirits. And because of that, I'm opening up a nonprofit, which I also hasn't disclosed, which is A Star Place, which is helping women to open their eyes, see, strategize, and change their life, transforming so that they will be well aware of what they're stepping into and when to step out if necessary.
Oh, I just got chills like through my entire body when you said that you were opening up A Star Place or A Star
Place.
I just get chills. This is going to be so good. I can just feel it.
Oh my goodness. I see a beautiful relationship and so many are going to learn from our experiences. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate the work that you do so very much. We're going to have a part two because Jennifer, this isn't over.
It definitely isn't over. It feels like we've just started the conversation.
Yes. And it's so on time because this is October.
It is October.
It is breast cancer mm-hmm. awareness, but it is also domestic violence awareness
month. Domestic violence awareness month. Exactly.
And actually, perfect timing.
Over on my podcast, The Empathic Mastery Show, I have hosted 3 people talking about DV. The first one is about a woman who was pregnant and left an abusive relationship. So classic domestic violence story. The next mm-hmm. one is the empath and the narcissist story. Mm-hmm. And then the third one is about sexual assault and that just aired, all about being a 2 times rape survivor and just all of the ways. And every one of these conversations is also talking about the interface between being an empath and succumbing to or finding ourselves getting caught in by the undertow. Because so often as empaths, we kind of drink the Kool-Aid mm-hmm. that the abuser or the perpetrator is serving us and is serving themselves. Because a lot of times part of it is that the person does not regard themselves as a despicable narcissist or as an abusive partner. They see themselves in a much more positive light. And as empaths, we often perceive them through their own lens or filter.
No matter how tainted it is, that is
so true. No matter how tainted it is. And especially if we are carrying around a lot of our own inner wounds about being ignored, about being invalidated, about being denied, and about just our own need to be loved, we can easily override our intuition and override what's true. And there's one thing I want to say from what you were just saying about, you know, that trusting or like losing our intuition. Mm-hmm. I actually believe that because we live in a culture where people tend to put on masks and tend to pretend that everything's fine when nothing is, or whether or when something is horribly wrong, that what happens is that the empaths learn at a very, very early age, as little kids. They're like, "Mommy, why are you sad?" And mommy goes, "I'm not sad. What are you talking about?" Or, "Daddy, why are you so angry about this?" "I'm not angry. What is your problem?" And we are taught, most of us are taught at a very early age, that what we're picking up and what we're sensing is not accurate. We are told, "You're being too sensitive. You're overreacting. You're taking it too personally. You know, this is not happening and this is not reality." Therefore, it makes it very, very hard for us to trust our intuition and trust our empathic, instincts, because we've been told since we were really little that it's not real and it's not legitimate and that it's not really happening. And so it's very understandable by the time we're young adults or even older adults, and we suddenly realize that we're caught in this quagmire of abuse and narcissism and empaths and stuff, it's often our trusting our own gut and trusting our intuition and trusting our empathic instincts have been denied and invalidated for such a long time. We have to reclaim that within ourselves in order to use that intuition to get ourselves out of the skid.
It is so important that we first recognize that we're in it. Mm-hmm. And then that we get ourselves out, because sometimes we'll look for someone to get us out. And then we're repeating the cycle all over again. But we are strong enough to do it. We can do it. Like, we are able. We have to believe in ourselves, and we have to go back and dig and realize we matter. Black lives matter. Fill in the blank. Lives matter. But you know what? How about my life matters? Whoever the my is, my life matters. And it matters enough that I need to take a look, see who I am without the mask, not who you say I am, but who I am. And walk that out. Fulfill that purpose instead of being who you want me to be or who you think I am.
Right.
It starts by looking in the mirror. You mentioned the Jacksons, and you know I'm a fan. So I'm going to go to Michael. I'm looking at the man in the mirror. But the song Man in the Mirror,
exactly the song you were singing, though.
We have to do that.
That's actually one of my favorite Michael Jackson songs, because, you know, we need to look at the person in the mirror. Mm-hmm. And I love this offering of my life matters, because I think, and in some ways, all of these, like, these debates about, you know, the people who are like, all lives matter. It's so crucial that we do acknowledge that Black lives matter. But I love the idea of coming back to my life matters, because I think that for so many of us, that's where we've thrown ourselves under the bus in the first place, is not acknowledging that our own life actually matters. And, you know, and just coming back to the mirror, looking at ourselves and starting to ask ourselves the questions, who am I? And I will say for myself that taking space for me, taking time, removing myself from the drama of other people's stories, making the choice to just even something as simple as, I'm not going to respond to that crazy hot mess text that came through at 11:30 at night. Those are some of the steps that allow us to start recognizing, who am I? What's mine? What's not mine? We have to take space And we have to believe that we matter in order to take and claim that space.
Yes, yes, yes. I totally agree. Oh my goodness, Jennifer, you are amazing. I love how you just candidly opened up, and whether we like it or not, you were in a lot of our backyards and on some of our front porches too. But I appreciate it, and we need it. We need more of this, because when we talk about it and it's out in the open, we can then fix it. We can then change.
We can.
So thank you. I want to wrap this up. Just part one. Trust and believe. This is just part one. But I want to wrap it up with, tell us how we can reach you. How can we stay connected with you?
Thank you so much. Just jump over to empathicmastery.com, and that will lead you to my free Facebook group where I do monthly masterclasses for free, as well as all of the ways to work with me in groups and privately, one-on-one individual work. But if you want to listen to the show, there's a theme here. Empathicmasteryshow.com is where you get to listen to the podcast and to get a copy of the book, which is 380 pages of explaining. First part is the what and the why of being an empath. And then the second part is all about the 5 steps of empathic mastery, which is recognize, which we talked about today, release, protect, connect, and act. Mm-hmm. And you can find that over at empathicmasterybook.com.
Wow.
So empathicmasterybook.com and then empathicmasterybook.com.
Go, 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 get the book, sign up for the masterclass. I mean, it's free. That right there is going to be life-changing. And you have so many amazing resources and tools for our listeners. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you once again for all that you do.
Oh, A-Star, thank you so much for having me here. This was a divine appointment. What you are creating, this nonprofit, is so needed. Your ancestors are smiling down at you with this. I just am overcome with tears. Like I'm just so full and brimming with emotion, because this is a blessed, blessed thing. This is ordained to happen.
I appreciate your words of confirmation. I am in agreement with you, and it feels good to hear it from someone else, because it has been generations in the making. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'm just so grateful that I'm the one being used to bring it into fruition.
Well, and so for so many of us right now, the buck is stopping with us.
Mm-hmm.
We are talking about thousands of years of abuse and trauma and wounds that have been, like the can has been kicked down the road. And we are the ones who are saying, no mas, this is going to be different now. We're going to do this in a different way. We're not going to pass this legacy on to our daughters and our sons and
absolutely
have this
not
continue. We're stopping it here. And there is such power in that. Oh, it's just so amazing.
Well, there is more to come. Because of time, we're going to wrap it up today. And I thank you so much for joining us on Purifying Truths.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This has been a blast.
Yes, my pleasure, my pleasure. And thank you for tuning in to Purifying Truths with A-Star. You too can connect with A-Star on Facebook and Instagram at Facets of A-Star. Tune in every Saturday at noon for exciting new guests who illuminate the world. Shine bright.